everyone, and welcome back to yet another episode of Panditri on a Pint. Today we are four blokes, a full house, having an above average football conversation, but it's a very special episode because it's our biannual transfer roundup. The window has just closed and the pundits are back to discuss the moves that were made in the transfer window, and these episodes are usually one of our better ones. But we decided to do it a little different this time around because it's not four of us, it's six of us having an above average football conversation. Joining us on the podcast today, our very special guest, Shaunik and Burhan. It's great to have you guys. The reason why we wanted to bring an extensive panel for this episode is to just get the views of a fan of the club and see how they think their transfer window went. Because it's three United fans and one Arsenal fan on the podcast, we can sometimes be a little biased and sometimes talk without knowing all of the facts.
Asking Poe to cosplay as a Chelsea fan has been disastrous so far. So
you still haven't asked me to cosplay as a Tottenham fan, man. When will that happen?
Bro, that though, I know it's beyond you, bro. So, like, we don't even ask you.
Someday.
That is a complete lost cause. Like, yeah. Okay, let's jump right in. We want to talk about the team that has spent the most in this transfer window and has been spending quite freely and openly. I don't get how. We are not here to discuss financial fair play. That's, I promise you listeners, there's an entire episode that we've reserved just to try and figure out how Chelsea are going to get past the financial fair play situation. But this is just to get an insight on their transfer dealings and what has gone on in this transfer window. Burhan, do you want to come in?
Hey guys, thank you so much firstly for having me on the show. So if I have to summarize this entire transfer window, I think like where we're going to end up, it's, these are just pieces right now. You know, we've not done this with a lot of cohesion in mind, but you've got to understand that Chelsea for the last 2 years has been run like a hedge fund, you know, and I think our transfer window has been a great reflection of that. We've bought parts from, you know, different teams, young parts with potential maybe, and we're expecting the team to work, which may or may not be true because some of these parts have actually started playing really well for us. Enzo Fernandez or Malo Gusto, who's had some really good games. But I don't really see how we can expect immediate results. And this is something that Chelsea fans are not famous for being. We are not patient, but I think we're going to have to learn.
Yeah, just for our listeners, we're recording this on September the 2nd, on the Saturday, and it's just after Chelsea have lost to Forest. Sorry to bring that up, Buran, but as you said, today was not a very good day. But let's talk a little bit about the players that have come in. Obviously, the biggest name in this is Moises Caicedo, and it was a proper transfer saga, right, Akshat? I mean, it was just one of those where you're refreshing your Twitter and it was crazy. That one particular day when I think Klopp came out in the press conference and even announced the player that is coming in, and then everything changed.
Amar, we don't talk about that day.
Yeah. Yeah, Shaunik, I'll come to the Liverpool side of it in just a bit.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, in terms of a transfer drama, it was exactly what us neutrals could have asked for. So basically what happened is that Brighton kept a deadline saying that, you know, by midnight this day we want the bids in, because they knew that there was more than one club interested, and they're like, you know, Chelsea had already been negotiating with Brighton for almost a month at that point, maybe even more, for the Caicedo transfer fee. And Brighton probably just had enough and said that, listen, this is the deadline day, just give us your highest number. And the highest number at that point was provided by Liverpool, which was around 100, 105 million. And everything seemed to be done because Brighton accepted the bid. I think Liverpool were happy to give that money. They'd worked the deal structure, which is very important when you have these big deals. Like, when are you going to pay all the money? I think all of that was done. And it looked for all the world that, you know, the transfer was done. And then in the last minute, Chelsea was still talking to the player. And the personal terms which Chelsea had agreed with the player were more favorable from Caicedo's point of view with Chelsea than Liverpool. So, you know, he flat out refused going to Liverpool. He said that as long as Chelsea are in the picture, let's just wait for that to happen. And Chelsea ended up coming in with a much higher bid than before. And when I say much higher bid, I mean British transfer record bid. That's how it went down. A lot of drama, a lot of, as you said, Klopp even came out in the press conference and almost said that the player was theirs. But that didn't work out. Leaving the entire transfer saga behind, if we talk about the player, Caicedo, he's a fantastic player. He is a fantastic prospect. I think that's a better word to use. He played really well for Brighton and...
That's enough, no, bro. So it makes him a good player. Like, he's prospecting.
But the thing is, Vaishnav, we spoke about this in a previous episode where transfer valuations are just crazy.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
But leave that. I'm talking about him as a player. He's playing well, no? It's not like he's just come into the Premier League.
Yeah, but even then, he's had just 1 year in the Premier League, right? And the thing is, Chelsea have gone big for the talent which they think are going to be the best players in the world 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line, which is fine. I mean, it's good. You want to go for the best talent, but you need to go, in my opinion, in a way where it's a mix of both. You can't just hedge all your bets on a future which you don't know if it's coming or not, right? This is a team which won the Champions League. How can you go from winning the Champions League to finishing 12th to now having a team which doesn't look at all cohesive on the pitch and doesn't have experience in that lineup? You look at that starting 11 and you're not seeing danger right now, right? Like, as a team looking at that starting 11, I'm not like, oh shit, it's Chelsea, right? Like, normally you feel that when you're facing a Chelsea side. Uh-huh. So I get the long-term strategy part of it, but it's not like you have to trade away your future to go for that, you know? And I feel like that's what Chelsea has done, where why are you trading away what you already have? This was a good team. You didn't have to make it so, I'm sorry, Burhan, but mediocre right now just to make, hopefully, them being really good 3 years from now.
Burhan, do you want to come in? What do you think about the Caicedo, Lavia, new look midfield?
Before I address that, I think it's really important to address this whole number argument that people like to throw out, right? Who deems what's expensive? Was 100 million for Liverpool expensive? There was nobody, using that phrase describing Liverpool's move. And you very subtly made a dig by calling it a huge increase, and the British record fee, it was 10 million more, right? I get the fact that, you know, it was whatever, a really big number, but that's just what you had to play for that player. Now, having said that, what Chelsea are doing right now, and this is coming from someone who's seen this team since maybe 2003, and I've seen us play on sentiment, I've seen us win Champions Leagues on sentiment, I've seen us just muscle through games on pure will. Like, none of that is seen in this team. Again, because these parts are still coming in sync. I don't know if you guys saw the Nottingham Forest game today, but like, Thiago Silva was more coach than player. Like, he was telling people where to stand while they were taking the free kick. This will take time, right? And the way Chelsea are buying right now, it's not just Caicedo. I think it's Mudrik, it's Lavia to a certain degree. All of these guys... You know, Chelsea are doing FNO trading and not stock trading.
I like that analogy of the hedge fund. I think that fits it very well.
Yeah. Yeah, they are hoping that 5 out of these 25 make them money. And that's what builds them the financial dynasty. There is some thought to it that relies on luck. But that's the intention right now. And that's not something that people... That's not something everyone gets. I don't get it myself. But... American sports are run this way, and this is
exactly
how Boehly and co have built these dynasties, and they're trying to do this in football. It's alien, it's strange. So many things trying to blend in. It's not going to be simple to talk about it. The best thing that we did in the transfer market, I just want to bring one small point up, is all the deadwood that we got rid of. I think that defined the success of Chelsea's transfer season. Is that what it's called? I don't know. Transfer window. Yeah, that, it's all the players we got rid of, which is our success. Maybe the guys we bought in might be good, might not be good, but we've got rid of so much deadwood, whether we've loaned them out or sold them. That's something that should be discussed as well. Yeah, Amar, yeah, back to you.
Shaunik, do you want to come in?
Yeah, so, you know, just to what Buran was saying, right? Like, there's a couple of things that I was thinking about. One is, say, with having, like, an owner like Ted Boehly, who you said that, you know, has built Sporting Dynasty this way. Is it worth making the football side suffer for the business side of things? Because if you look at that Chelsea team, there is not a single, say, Chelsea, like, not a lot of Chelsea players in the first team who have that spirit of, you know, the London spirit or the Chelsea spirit in them. Very few players. You have Conor Gallagher there. You have a couple of youngsters there, right? But you've bought in so many players out from the market who have, say, no connection to the club, right? These are just sort of stars that have been brought in. And I think, you know, Arsene Wenger said in the past, Klopp has said in the past, you bring too many players in one window and it's very difficult to integrate all of those pieces within the squad, right? Because those players, A, have to settle into the city, they have to settle into the squad, dynamics are varied among so many different players, and that kind of settling in process for these players can take a large amount of time, right? Like, when you're settling in 1, 2, 3 players, while having people who've been there for like a long time, they make it easier. But when you're settling in 4 players, 5 players, 6 players, 10 players, right, it might work for 3, 4 very easily, and most of the other people is going to be really hard to really gel together, settle together. So you're risking your entire, say, squad or season on that. And, you know, if people just don't settle, they won't play football, they won't have their head in the game, and they might as well then leave the club.
Yeah, and we've seen something like this happen, and we spoke about this in our previous episode as well, where, you know, when they're making big money moves to bigger clubs, there are more eyeballs that are looking at them, and that's another way of, you know, that's another thing that they have to deal with. Playing for Brighton week in, week out is not the same as playing for Chelsea week in, week out. And that is something that a player may or may not have, that kind of mentality. And you're right, I mean, with a well-coached, well-experienced team, with the more senior players helping the younger players come in, it sort of makes that transition easier. But in this case, you, as Buran said, they are buying parts, and those parts have to work. I mean, there is no two ways about it. Chelsea have to qualify for the Champions League this season, because that is what they expect to do after spending a billion, right? Sorry, Shaunik, I just want to bring Poe in really quickly for his point.
Thanks, Amar. So, okay, what I was just going to say is, we've been talking so much about Chelsea spendings. No, like, just to put it into figures, their net spend, including fees added on, all of those included, comes up to 199 million British pounds, okay? And that is the highest, which is in this summer transfer window. And the second is Arsenal, and then United, and then Tottenham. The teams behind them are like 50 million less, so that's it. But the thing is, there are so many outgoings. To add to what Shaunik said, the number of players that have left Chelsea, the number is 24. This is, I'm including players that have left on loan, and the number of players they've gotten in is 12. Oof. So the changes, incomings and outgoings in the club is insane. But when you look at the figure in total, it just comes up to 199 mil, which in today's age is a Neymar fee or a Kylian Mbappe fee, standalone. So just to put things
into perspective. But I think that comes down to the next point, is why doesn't Chelsea chase a Neymar or an Mbappe? What I mean by that is someone who is more proven and you know, who is an immediate fit into the starting 11. We've gone and bought players like, you know, Angelo Gabriel for like 13 million. There's absolutely no reason why we needed that, right? These are not small numbers. They tend to add up. 13 million into 10 players adds up, you know. So I would have loved it if Chelsea spent 150 on Declan Rice, you know. We knew what we were getting. It was a much better signing. And what this team probably needed was maybe one of those.
But the thing is, Buran, the way the Chelsea, like the Chelsea boardroom and the management is moving, you know what they're going for. As we're talking about, like, they're looking at 2 years down the line. But as a club, do you think Chelsea can sustain that model? there's too much changes. There's too much, this, like, there's no stability in the club for to go down this approach is what I say. Like, I know you guys have finished 12th, but looking to build for the future, will you give Pochettino 2 years?
The answer is no, because historically we never have, right? No one's gotten time. Not someone who's won the Champions League 6 months ago. You know, Di Matteo did that, didn't get time. He was in a similar-ish sort of position where we had a lot of transition. You know, the spine was broken after the Champions League victory. We lost Drogba. And I think Lampard moved on that season as well. Or maybe it was a season after. I may be wrong, but yeah. So this has always been the case. He's not going to get time. This is just not something that's happened.
Yeah. And overall, let's just talk about the overall players that have come in and gone out, Buran. What do you think of the picture strategy of this transfer window? Because from what happened, what happened with the winter transfer window was that they were definitely making hedge bets on young players like Mudrik and Enzo to see the kind of potential that they could live up to. Now, Mudrik is still on the fence. I don't think he's gotten the right go at Chelsea. Enzo is starting week in, week out. But this transfer window, this does seem to be some strategy where they're trying to fill up holes in the system that Poch wants to play in.
I think this is where I finally stand up for my club. So the one good thing that they did was they bought in players in every single position that had deficiencies. We desperately need a striker. And we got, you know, Nicholas Jackson or Nicholas Torres, as they're calling him after today's miss. but we got him in.
Oh, how did he miss that?
that was terrible. But anyway, back to the point. Like he was one of the most promising young strikers, because that's what we're going to go for from the end of last season. So yeah, filled in an important spot. Nkunku came in. I mean, everyone knows he's class. There's no doubting his skill. Unfortunate with the injury, but I guess that's just a Chelsea thing. Then, you know, we got Disasi in because we needed cover for Badiashile and Fofana. He seems like a pretty decent signing. I'm on the fence about Robert Sanchez. I don't really understand that transfer. Like, if Chelsea knew we needed a keeper, why didn't they go for Raya? You know, the much better keeper available, Raya probably would have picked Chelsea.
The keeper market this time was quite open. A lot of keepers moving in and out. So that was a weird... Yeah,
so that was a strange signing. But I'm assuming that was some... Like, I genuinely believe, and I remember texting Amma this, that I thought Robert Sanchez was Chelsea's way of getting 30 million in for the Caicedo deal. You know, it was just one of those buys that they
had to make. Balancing the books out of a situation.
Yeah, balancing the books. It doesn't look like they've bought 110 million players. Akshat would have been satisfied if it was like 90. Lavia, I've seen very little of him, but from the 10-minute YouTube video that I saw, he looks like a promising kid as well.
That is what scouts do. You're a scout. That's basically.
I made the same mistake with Fred.
No way you can fill 10-minute highlights for Fred, at least at that point.
What is this slander, dude? What is this slander?
No. I always... At United, he was mad. Before that, Shakhtar, Donetsk, and all, you are telling me 10-minute, you'll get compilation. Find it for me. Oh, financially, bro. Fuck it.
Okay, let's close on Chelsea and move ahead. Burhan, do you have any closing points, or anyone else any closing points, really quickly?
Yeah, I was gonna I have a small thing to say. Chelsea, I mean, this is just going back a year since you guys bought up Lavia. I vaguely remember them trying to bid for Lavia after he moved to Southampton from City in the same window on deadline day.
Wasn't that also a fairly large transfer? Yeah, 50. That was also like a...
No, as in, like, I don't know the fees. No, I don't know the fees Southampton paid, but Chelsea bid 50 million for him in the same transfer window. This is FIFA, man. Like,
professional football is an elaborate money laundering operation. I'm saying it right now. How can you with a straight face pay 50 million for some City Academy kid? Fuck, crazy.
And Chelsea have been quoting both Lavia and Caicedo since the winter transfer window. So they've been having those relationships building with their camp for the longest time before they even like finally got down to signing these two guys.
And aren't they both fairly similar profile of players, like in terms of positions that they fill and like qualities.
And they also signed Cole Palmer, which was one of the most like random out of the blue.
See, okay,
signings. Yeah, that is one transfer I don't get. I don't get why we needed to do that.
It's mind boggling to me.
Money laundering, man! I'm fucking telling you.
Like there are seriously, man. Like yeah, there are some deals like what Burhan said, like which just don't make sense. There are a lot of deals they made which does make sense in their model of building for the future. But Cole Palmer for that much money in a position which Chelsea have already kind of filled.
Never let them guess your next move, bro. Keep them on their toes.
So basically, the conclusion of this is that after six panelists, we're still not completely sure what Chelsea are doing, but I'm sure they'll figure it out.
Sounds like Chelsea's bored to me.
They always do.
Oh, allow you, we have a Sterling.
Let's move ahead. Liverpool, since Shaunik is here. Now, I just want to start off with some context.
Chelsea got Lavia and Caicedo. Let's start with that.
Burhan's going to be a lot happier for the rest of the pod.
He's waiting for this moment.
That's the only thing I can brag about so far this season. So.
Okay, so for Liverpool, just a little bit of context, right? In 22-23 season, they scored 75 and they conceded 47. And to give you some further context, in 21-22, they conceded only 26. That is when they lost to City by 1 point. And 19-20, when they won, they conceded 33. So there's quite a big chunk of goals that are added in their defensive shape. Last season, Liverpool conceded 370 chances in total, which was 73 more than their previous campaign, and the most since Klopp's arrival. And out of those 370, there were 103 big chances created. So big chances meaning with a higher XG, and they were only behind Leeds and Fulham all through the season where big chances were conceded. And there was a very clear explanation to this, which was something that was said all around social media, and I'm saying it in quotes, which is run down midfield, which was clearly an issue for them. It exposed the living life out of Trent, who was just getting caught out of position again and again and again and again. And Liverpool have come into this transfer window with one... Liverpool have come into this transfer window with one very, very clear intention, right? Which is to stop their midfield being run down. And hence the transfers of Endo, of McAllister, of Szoboszlai, of Gravenberch. And that's it. That's the positions that they filled. Shaunik, I want to bring you in to try and understand what you think of this new look midfield of Liverpool is. And I have one more question to throw at you right from the start. Endo and Gravenberch almost feel like panic buys. Like they are trying to bet on either one of them, of one of those two to click, and trying to see which one works out. What do you think?
Okay, cool. You know, the way that I'd kind of answer that question is like, first, yes, rundown midfield, aging midfield, not too many legs. You had Milner, Keita and Ox were perpetually injured, right? You had Milner who was in for 2-3 games, could never do a full 90 minutes. You had Hendo who would again disappear for 6-8 months with injury, right? And Fabinho was clearly didn't look like his past self at all. Like as much as people would blame, say, the defense, you kind of have to start at the midfield. What I've kind of seen is that they're kind of going top down in terms of refreshing the squad, right? Like first they started refreshing, say, the forward lineup in terms of the age profile as well as in terms of the players that they wanted to play and the style they wanted to play. This season they've gone with the midfield, right? My first thing is I actually kind of like the four signings that they've made this season, like all four of them, I'm all for that, right? Because if you look at three out of four signings, which is McAllister, Szoboszlai, and Gravenbach, right? These guys are not per se, you know, these guys are very versatile in terms of where they can play, right? They can play as sixes, they can play as eights, they can play in a number 10 position, all pretty much all three of them, right? Endo, I don't think he's a panic buy. I think he's a very thought out buy for me, because like he's proven himself in the German league. He's a fighter. He's pretty much all energy guy. Can substitute and play in, say, two to three different positions, which is six. He can play as a four in defense, and he can also play as a right back position, right? Gravenberch is again, like, again, he's been top of Klopp's, whatever it is. But I think, like, the way that Liverpool figured out their structure towards the end of last season was like, hey, we can play with, like, three at the back, play a box four midfield, play three in the front. Versus before that, he used to play a clear 4-3-3 with a single pivot, right? With these signings, any four, like, of course, Endo is more of like a number six, but any of the other three players can play as a double pivot while the other two people bomb forward. You bring in Trent as a double pivot, the other two players can still, in front of Trent and Endo can still, the other two players can still bomb forward, right? So I think it's that very versatile dynamic that I really like, and I think that's the way that he wants to play, where he can fluidly switch between formations, between the 3-4, 3-box-4 to from, in even a 4-3-3.
Vaishnav?
Like, just on that point of the transfer, I feel like when you buy, especially midfielders, it's like, so obviously Klopp and the whole, I don't know, backroom staff and the whole stats guys, they're very driven in terms of fitting their profile. They won't just go buy people. They'll get people for the system they want to implement and they buy them. And we know the system is very like intensive and stuff. Like we've seen them literally go through players. They fucking broke their toys and sent them back. Fucking Navigator, bro. God damn, bro. But anyway, right? Like they've been doing their thing. And I think that obviously excellent team, excellent coach, excellent players, and at that level everybody is. But like their midfield is always going to be a midfield that requires churning of players through them at the highest of technical and athletic ability, because that's just what's required for the work product of what their coach wants to play a certain 100%. Way. If you want to play that way, you can run your bones to the nub. But you also have to be very competent as a footballer, and that's a very small niche of player that you can get at that high level that's willing to do it, right? So, like, they get it. But, like, for me, the one thing is they never do it at the rate that they should be doing in terms of the smart recruitment. Because I don't see these three players as having very dissimilar profiles, but none of them are sixes. I don't believe any of them are a six. Like, these three players. Endo maybe an out-and-out six. Yeah. But, like, Fabinho must have been, what, one of the best sixes in the Premier League for, like, a season. Their system destroyed him. And, like, this is going to happen to everybody. And I think you not replacing that by just going out and buying a world-class one, not like United and buying Casemiro, even though he's great. I'm talking about now, Prime. Just go get the best eggs. I don't know, get Tchouameni. I can't pronounce his name, but get that dude. Like, get somebody who can play at six and who is great. But, like...
So to that point, right, like, who was available at that point in time? Caicedo was available. Was available. Bid gaya na. And we don't talk about that day for the simple reason that nobody knew. Nobody, like us as Liverpool fans, had no hopes of getting Caicedo in, right? Middle of the night, that bid goes in. We're like, oh fuck, can he come? Next day, our dreams were shattered. We're like, fuck it. In a way, I'm glad that it didn't happen, right? In a way, I can be glad that it didn't happen.
Acceptance, because, last bro, stage of grief.
Yeah, it is.
No, this because, is denial, bro. Like,
no, I'm glad it happened. It's acceptance, Nota. It didn't happen is denial, Nota. Like, I'm glad. I will take it upon my soul as a good experience.
Shaunik is clearly past the Channa Merea phase.
Full Channa Merea phase is gone, bro. Because, like, in a span of 2 days, you lose two of your top targets for a number six position.
Akshat, do you want to come in?
Yeah. So, see, I mean... I think what Shaunik said was absolutely right, where there was first a focus on refreshing the forward line, and this time there's a focus on refreshing the midfield line. A lot of that was forced on Liverpool. I think the drop-off of Fabinho was completely unexpected from their point of view. Keita didn't work out as they wanted. Henderson, I mean, getting that kind of a bid for Henderson, I'm sure Klopp was like, wait, is this even possible?
Get the fuck out of here.
Please. Yeah.
Take him and go.
Hey, no, Hendo has been mad, Papa.
No, but for that much money, I'm just saying, like, it's
Saudi money.
Yeah.
Take him and go, just leave your LGBTQ flag behind.
Yeah. That has been you said it. I'm not gonna say more about that. But yeah, I mean, so there was a desperate need, right? And Shaumik, while I agree with, you know, the change in tactics from a proper 4-3-3 to that box midfield, which is, I mean, it's standard across the Premier League almost. Like, a lot of, at least the top teams are going for that now. When Pep started it, Arteta started it, Ten Hag has started it. Now, Liverpool also, I think, one of the earlier adopters.
Latest trend.
But, yeah, it is. But I think the problem which Liverpool had is that whenever they targeted someone, they didn't get that person. And Bellingham was, I'm not dissing anyone. It happened, bro. Like Bellingham was someone who Liverpool were courting for a really long time, right? And when Madrid come in, it's not Liverpool's fault. It's fucking Madrid. It's very tough to win a transfer war against Real Madrid.
There's no war.
They come with that. Yeah. I mean, seriously, right? And so that went by. The Caicedo thing, I mean, they had to beat Daddy Boli when it comes to giving money.
Dad.
Nobody gives more money than
Daddy.
That.
Daddy.
Right? Yeah. Lavia. Lavia also is someone who they were interested for, right?
Yeah.
Amrabat, I'm not saying Liverpool went in for Amrabat the way United did, but he was an option. But that even Amrabat...
No, Bald is best. It's understood.
Akshat, when I look at it in retrospect, right, see the amount of money that we've actually ended up spending now, right, which is 146 million, right? I'm not even talking about net spend. If we'd bought, in retrospect, again, this is clearly in retrospect, if we'd bought Bellingham, that was the budget.
So that is exactly the point I was getting to, where Liverpool, I mean, like what you said, if you look at these individual signings, yes, they do make sense in the context of how they want to play. And Szoboszlai can play this role. He's young. He's good. McAllister's he can play all positions. Endo's a good, useful player. Gravenberch is someone who has good potential. Maybe not proven it at Bayern.
But the business Bayern did off of him, bro.
Crazy.
Did not play him. Asset appreciates. Take it. Give me Duddu. I will cut. That's about it.
Yeah, for listeners, they bought him for 17.5 million a year ago, and he started 3 games and he's not played 90 minutes even one game, and they've sold him for 40 plus 5 in add-ons. Insane business, right? But the point I was trying to get at is that it feels like Liverpool kept, I don't know, man, they kept going for plan B, and then for that plan B they went to another plan B, and then for that plan B they went to another plan B, and
so, see, the plan A only worked out in 2 cases, which is Virgil van Dijk and Alisson.
Yeah.
Right? We spent ridiculous amounts of money there, and which we were kind of sure of, we got those players. I don't think anybody would have, even Liverpool fans would have been like, oh, we're going to sign Mane. Oh, we're going to sign Firmino. Oh, we're going to sign Salah. Oh, we're going to sign Fabinho. Right? All of these things always caught the rest of the league off guard, and
but
Liverpool fans off guard.
It's more of Liverpool getting who they actually want, which didn't happen. Like, I'm not saying any of your signings are bad players, but they're not the people who Liverpool went in for initially, you know? And
I agree,
And with the box midfield as well, you still need that pivot. Like, that guy who can be your defensive cover, right? Something which Henderson did really well. Something which Fabinho did really well. And I don't think Liverpool have that. The thing is, I said this in the last episode as well, their attack is so good that it might
FIFA,
be enough.
Bro,
like, that might
FIFA, that shit. Let's go.
And one thing I've loved, generally love about all the 4 players that they've bought are these guys are A, press resistant, B, they do not lose the ball.
Very good on the ball.
Right?
Excellent.
And that is very good on the ball, and that continues on to even players that we have in the team, right? Which is Thiago, which is, you know, Curtis Jones. These guys don't lose the ball. So,
but your Liverpool's concerns have never been players who are not good on the ball. They've always had that talent. But there's clearly a gaping hole.
But
I mean,
they can't just get somebody who's physical, right? They can't just get some big hunk and slot him in there. They need to get a very technically proficient version.
What I am trying to say is that, okay, so this is my take on their entire transfer window, right? they desperately needed a number six, and I don't believe they've gotten a number six. It's as simple as that.
Like, no, that's a fair assessment, right? Like, and the thing is, I don't think Klopp's always worked with or has always had absolute solution in every position, right? Because I never thought Henderson was a great midfielder. Still, Klopp managed to get him a PFA Player of the Year award in the season that we won the Premier League, right? Which is fucking ridiculous to me sometimes. Right, like how did Henderson get all the way there? So you're saying
Klopp will mold Endo or Gravenberch into the player?
No, it's not about. See, that for me, Endo is purely just the shithouser, right? Like he's gonna press like crazy. He's gonna try and his interceptions are actually really good. He's not your out and out defense, like deep lying playmaker, right? Who can win the ball and then, you know, unleash like a crazy through ball to actually start the attack. So I think Klopp is going for more of like a system where he has a bunch of these 3-4 players who are expected to do all the 3-4 things, and as a strategy, every player is expected to press and win the ball back.
Yeah, but they don't have there's number six is still the hole is what you are saying as well.
The hole in the position, it's the hole in the position, the way that we see it might be there, but it's like, hey, if everyone's supposed to go and win the ball back, right, in every position, then maybe that can fill in the gap of us having like just a one midfield destroyer who's constantly his only duty is to win the ball back and pass it along and, you know, sort of start creating plays.
But the thing with this position is that it's such a specific position, and there are such specific players who can fill that position, which is why City will pay that kind of money for a Rodri, which is why he's so crucial to that team. I think Rodri is like the first name on a City team sheet, which is why Arsenal would pay that kind of money for a Declan Rice. But you are telling me that now the four midfielders that you've gotten are all sixes, eights and tens. Does that really work is something that we'll have to see.
I'm happier that there are more numbers in midfield and they are quality numbers as far as, say, Szoboszlai or a McAllister is concerned. Endo is a buy, which is more like a versatile buy. He can fit into centre-back, right-back as well. And he's like a James Milner signing. Overall, I think it's an above-average transfer season. I still feel like I would have liked to see another centre-back and a right-back signing. To be honest, maybe spend that extra 30, 40, 60 million.
Right-back.
Get those two.
Do we want a backup Trent or do we want to replace him?
Backup. Okay. Of course, backup.
Okay. I'm so discontent.
if you replace Trent, that's great because then you have another midfielder there.
Oh,
right?
He intends
to. Do the Gareth Southgate thing. Get him in midfield. I have no problems with that. But okay, like, you know, the Klopp will always work with solutions. He's like, okay, I have problems. We'll figure out what works best. And sometimes you just enjoy that. And I'm game for that for the next season. He has three more left with us. So, you know, we'll see something good will come off. And it's a good set of players that he's gotten. So, yeah, I'm excited for what system he uses and like whatever solutions he finds.
Yeah. Okay. Moving ahead. Last season, there was a little bit of squad depth issues, I think, which led to the sort of steam that was lost in the title race. How was the Arsenal transfer window for you? And bottle. How was the Arsenal transfer window for you? And do you think they've addressed that concern of squad depth?
Papa, bro. Don't do that.
Same thing last episode. Poor guy.
Bully the bitch.
It's been a good transfer window, man. It's been a good transfer window. I choose to ignore you boys and I'll stick to my point here.
Boo.
I mean, I don't think we've seen a transfer window recently from Arsenal where we've decided who we want to go get and then done it very early in the transfer window. And that person being a world beater and like he's world class. And I don't think... I think given the opportunity, every team in the world would have wanted to sign him, apart from Madrid, who got Bellingham. But anybody else would, given the option, who's looking for a 6 or an 8, would have wanted to buy him. And I think getting Declan Rice shows the intent and where we are right now. Hopefully, it sustains for another season or so. That's besides the point, but still. I mean, that's wonderful business there. So I can't comment much on Declan Rice. He can do everything, like, except play in 10, and I don't think Arteta would expect him to do that as well. But apart from that, we've gone Timber, and he's amazing, man. Like seeing him play those couple of games in preseason and the first game he played, It was epic. It was just like watching Zinchenko, a mirror image of Zinchenko, but this boy is actually better than Zinchenko in terms of the actual art of defending. And so he's a future signing. Sad to see that he's gone through the whole ACL phase now.
ACL phase.
More than 8 or 9 months.
He's not growing up now. He snapped it. He's not. He doesn't have a mild gambling habit. It's not. He fucking got injured.
I mean, I'll...
Oh, but do you think they still were one center back short?
Definitely. I think compared to last season, we are short in defenders. But nobody would have expected what happened to Timber to happen, right? Like, you can't make contingency for that. You can't just go buy another player just because now you have a ACL for a player who you just bought, by the way. You can't, like, that's not the solution. You've got to like work your way through it, try to find other solutions. There is no immediate fix to it. Like, you got to work around, like, by do all these weird stuff, like try to play another center back there in left back position, or like hope that Zinchenko actually manages to play 38 games in a season, which I don't think will happen because he's never been that player. You'll get out of him is 20 to 25 games in a season. But like, I think I just hope that Zinchenko is there for a while until at least Timber comes back. Then you can have the options to rotate. Otherwise, you mirror the whole thing. Like, you do what you've been doing with the right hand side by putting a center back hybrid left back over there in place of Timber, and try to play a more expansive player on the right.
And Po, very quickly again, do you think in the forward line we did expect Havertz to play that sort of number 9 center forward position, but he's not. He's playing almost as a number 8. Do you think they also should have gone for a backup striker to Jesus, another goal scoring threat?
No, I don't think so though. Like, I would have liked to see it, but Arteta has been keen on Eddie, and even though Balogun has been had killed it last season in French League. But yeah, French League. So yeah, he's been killing it there, but he decided very early that he'd keep Nketiah and move Balogun on. So he's quite fixed with that forward lineup of Jesus and Nketiah there. I don't think we need another player there. But Havertz, right from the off, like, everyone knew he was going to be that left-sided 8 role. Because, yeah, he's that half-and-half player. He's best there, like, in the second striker role, no? Like, chasing the ball and then coming late into the box and scoring goals there. He's got an immense presence. Yeah, he's got an immense presence there. Like, he's got that timing down to perfection. So he'll work out there. I mean, he's sort of that player who needs all the love you can give him, man. Like, he seems that kind of a player. Like, the way...
I'm sorry, but...
I was waiting for Burhan to come in.
No, I'm sorry, but you can't call Havertz perfect anything. He's not got his timing down perfect. Okay, Kai Havertz, when we signed him from Leverkusen, I was really excited that we were getting Germany's, you know, next big talent. He has scored a Champions League final goal, right? What else can he do? You figure it out. Let me know. I'm just glad you bought him for 55. That's all.
No, the thing is, Buran, like, Chelsea haven't managed to use any of the players that they've bought to their full potential in the last 2 to 3 years, man. So I don't, like, that point is not valid. Coming to what I was trying to say about Havertz is, he looks like that lazy, casual player, right? So the thing is, just by the eye test, he's the sort of player that many people will throw shade at. Fans will get on his back very easily. And that's already happening. Like, you can see that happening in the last 2 or 3 games already. Like, fans are already booing him. And, like, that's partly also due to the fact that he's come from Chelsea. And, yeah, man, the reactionary as hell. And he sort of reminds me of Ozil in that sense, in terms of his body language. Only body language. I'm not talking about his ability. And looking at that, he seems like the player that you need to give lots and lots of appreciation and love to, so that he needs his time and can be what he is.
He's not a fucking houseplant, bro.
Dude, he's human. He needs more than that.
That was one of the sweetest things Po has ever said, bro.
Po is positive mental health awareness. Bro,
he's changed my...
Nice boss. Nice boss.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, bro. Okay. The other person that we've gotten is Raya. I think I'm missing one more, no? We've signed four players. So, that is...
Declan.
Timber, Rice, Havertz, Raya. Yeah.
Yeah, Raya. I mean, what can I say much about Raya? I mean, he's a very good goalkeeper, and I was damn surprised that we got him on loan.
Fucking imagine how surprised Ramsdale was then.
Yeah, man. Like, the thing is, like, every report coming out is, and all pundits' opinions are that you don't need another number one goalkeeper there. But Arteta keeps coming out and saying that, like, we need to have competition in every single position out there, and now we have one in goalkeeping as well. So that's all I can say about Raya. I mean, need to see how he plays in an Arsenal shirt yet. Like, we haven't seen that. But the problem is, man, like, 7 years since we've last been in the Champions League. So, I mean, we've got a lot of games to play. So everyone's going to get their minutes. We'll see that.
This season also, you're not in Champions League, bro. This season also in Europa League. What is that group, da?
We pulled a City, man. Like,
have you guys seen the famous post where they link the Champions League? They're linking the draw, okay? But how they have it is like Champions League. First point is how it works, okay? So it's like you guys have been out for that long.
I saw another post to add to that, you know? We've been unbeaten in the Champions League for the last 7 years, bro.
Yeah, it's so, a great
draw. Like, have a go at us this season.
David Raya's first game will be in the Carabao Cup against Brentford.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah, man. That's a good call out. I think that'll happen.
Nice. Poor closing points on Arsenal. Happy with the transfer window?
I am, but I don't know if we are actually stronger than we were before the transfer window, because we've seen Arteta mess around with his system a lot, and he says this is required and not something that he's just trying to fool around and not pull a Pep. But we'll see how it goes. Like, I'd rather have a destabilized first half of the season than what happened last season.
What if they're both destabilized? Mm. Is the question that's going to get answered.
Yeah, like, it's not either or, bro. You can improve.
Let me tell you, after failing my fair share of classes, it can be both.
Moving ahead, let's talk about United. Now, in our previous episode, we already addressed Mason Mount and, you know, how he's going to need a little bit of time to settle into that role, and how he's an upgrade to Christian Eriksen, Eriksen filling in that gap of number bald 6, number best. 8, or hybrid, whatever you call it. Bald is best, yes. But we did make 3 very, very good, in my opinion, deadline day signings with Zinedine Amrabat. And I'm just not saying this now, but Akshat and I have actually been saying this since the World Cup, where we've been calling him Zinedine Amrabat. For listeners who think I'm lying, go listen to our episodes.
Don't need to be that defensive, Dan. Chill. We don't think you're lying. Not you, Amar. Amar, like, go, listen.
Oh.
He said it.
No, it's just a plug-in to our previous episodes, sorry, bro. Because yeah.
Marketing efforts, bro. Too good.
I'm too cynical.
But no, I remember, okay. I remember exactly what I said. Because, like, I was speaking about him anyway as a new signing. So, I'm just going to refer to what I said during the World Cup, which he had an outstanding World Cup, right? Where I said that he reminds me of my favorite midfielder of all time, and that is Schweinsteiger. And that's the biggest compliment I can ever give to a midfielder. The way he played that World Cup was fucking amazing. And if he can bring that, because that is what we need. He's never going to be as good as Schweinsteiger, but that spirit of fuck it, I'm going to run my ass off and I'm going to break my bones if I have to win that ball away from this midfielder. United, I don't think it's any secret that we suck at defensive transitions. Like, quite plainly put, we are horrible at it. We are very open to counterattacks. We were worse at it even, like, you know, when Maguire was starting game in, game out. But
Papa,
even now,
he's not here in the conversation.
He's still at the club, bro. But I mean, I'm just saying, like, it's an evolution, right? We've gotten players who are better at that. And of course, getting Casemiro in was a huge, huge upgrade in that sense from the McFred midfield, which we had, right? And I feel like getting Amrabat in is another one.
It's a quality signing.
And for like, I mean, the deal structure, because we're broke, we had to offer him a loan for this season. And
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's a loan. It's a loan with an option to buy. Not even an obligation to buy, but I'm pretty sure.
Crazy.
Take place.
I don't remember the last time United signed players on loan. And this season, they've signed two.
Hey, come on, da. We were loaning Larry's for season, 1 point.
Who you loaned last season, bro?
Sabitzer and Weghorst.
Fucking Ighalo, bro. His fucking well-esteemed...
Odion Ighalo.
It's always... Yeah. It's the same story, bro. We're broke. We need someone. We get someone. But whatever. Like, we won't talk about our... Actually, we can talk about our poor selling habits. We don't sell players enough at a good price. But I'm really happy with that signing. So, I think the deadline day signings, which you talked about, Amar, he is by far... the most important one for our team.
But you lose out
in terms of quality, he's
two
the best
game
as well.
Weeks by doing fucking business like I do fucking projects during university, bro. You want a player, you fucking get him, and what is this jerking him around for the entirety of the window?
I think that was more to do with the transfer structure.
Suck my fucking transfer fucking want a player, you go get him in.
It is definitely the transfer structure, Vaishnav. I don't think they had money even to cough up the 10-15
million.
Temporary
workers doing your job or what? If you are doing this transfer structure now, it could have been done 1 month ago. It's not... Transfer window is not a pop quiz. It happens every year at a certain time. We didn't lose a number 6 day before yesterday. We've never had a number 6 in the last 10 fucking years except Casemiro. So you know this shit is required. You figure it out before. What is this last minute Wikipedia and fucking referencing yourself from last article? This is not how this shit works. Fucking United, bro.
I think it was more to do with playing a hand against Fiorentina and not giving
in
to
a
transfer fee. It got him on loan.
Bro, it's a 10 million loan fee, Amar. It's 10 million for
how much
loan.
Wages,
let's not
wages
go there.
Wages were paying entirety of the wages, I'm fairly certain.
100%.
100%. Whose hand you played? You played your own hand on your own cock, fucking standing there in that meeting room.
There's a lot of shit that you gotta cut out of.
No, not getting cut out, because I totally agree with whatever Vaishnav said.
It's so stupid, dude. It's such a stupid way to do business. Like, just frankly, it's any organization run this way, that structure is fucking rooted out day after tomorrow. It's like, you don't... How can you do that, dude? And it's so bad. Okay, maybe they're waiting for McTominay to leave, but even that, to me, is not.
No, and I think the important difference here is that it's not someone who we recognize, oh, we need to fill this late in the window. Or it's not someone like a Gravenberg, for example, who they knew, okay, fine, we need to find someone.
Yeah, last minute
and they
good
got
deal.
Someone.
Yeah.
We've been talking to this dude from June, bro. Like, what is going on here? I totally agree with Vaishnav. It's poor. Like, the way...
It's
and
so
like, this crazy. Is the thing which frustrates me, because people who are not United fans, they're like, oh, you spent this much money. Look at the way we're spending it. It's so bad. Yes. It is so bad. Same thing happened last season where we bought Casemiro after losing the first two games for 60 million. We bought Antony for 100 million. When we were negotiating a 50 million fee for him in June, we paid double that to get him because there was a panic buy. These
what
examples
about
of
fucking
us being
Onana?
So...
Huh?
Yeah. Let's talk about Onana, please.
Who the fuck runs this fucking organization, bro? Like, I know everybody works at their job and everybody thinks, dude, this organization is run so badly. Fuck, how does the world function? All that shit. Like, everybody, you see the inner workings of things and you're like, bro, this guy went on he went on a free to Inter last season. You could have gotten him on a free, bedded him in, played him in the cup if you knew you wanted to replace your keeper, and De Gea's on his last year. This is what a fucking intern level human being is thinking of. If you pay me fucking seven figures a year, bro, I will come up with some fairly decent ideas. And you're telling me you get him in now after paying a pretty large fee, which eats into your transfer budget for other positions. This is a position where we had a world-class player, did not fit playing style. He got him out, got a new player to fit in playing style. You still need a fucking six. We haven't had a six since the fucking Stone Age, bro. What you... We've not had a six since I can remember. Casemiro, all respect to him, quality player. Fairly towards the end of his career, and you can't bank on that, dude. You can't bank on that. I'm not cynical. I'm sorry, just for listeners, I'm not being cynical. This is what it fucking is, man. Why would you know? This is such, like, it's just poorly run. It's like everybody's on different WhatsApp groups and they're talking in different, like, times. It's just, How can it be so badly run, dude? It's so bad.
It's completing your homework in zero period.
But I read something recently that may, in fact, support the United hierarchy.
What is it, bro? Fucking manifesto of some serial killer.
Dude, I've heard that Ten Hag is actually very limited with the players he wants to sign. He doesn't really give them options. Which is not necessarily a good thing, because then you don't have any negotiating power.
I will trust that bald man who I barely know over the fucking pieces of shit that I know for quite a long time. If he's saying something, I'll take it over signing fucking...
Yeah, but because of his strategy, you're very poor when it comes to negotiating anything for yourselves. Because when United go for someone, Ten Hag really wants him and they know that he doesn't know or want anyone else. So then the ball is not in United's court ever. That's why you paid 70 million national market.
Wait. Before you start, Vaishnav, I'll just say this, okay? This is like what you're saying. It might be right. Bro. I'm not taking that until he plays at least 90 minutes, bro. Okay?
For good banter, you have to acknowledge that was a very hit.
No, but Burhan, what you're saying, I mean, it's right, but this is not a Ten Hag thing, dude. We've seen this ever since Ferguson left the club. We've seen this ever since Woodward was the one in charge. It is a pattern which is not 1 year old. It is a pattern which is 10 years
it's
old.
It's incompetence. There's no pattern. It's uniformity.
Every single time. It's consistency. Every single time. And yeah, and like it's what beautiful. I said a bit earlier, right? With Ten Hag,
how are they
like
not
what you're saying,
background?
He's very clear in what he wants, right? And what Vaishnav said, like about the playing style of a goalkeeper. Now, the club needs to make, if there is a keeper like Onana available for a free last season, go for that. Ten Hag, like you said, is very clear in what he wants. And the Antony situation.
And the counterpoint to all this is, if that doesn't work for you, don't get that coach in. Get somebody else in. Like,
It's extremely frustrating for us because when Ten Hag wants someone, everyone can be like, yeah, I see that. I see how that works in the team. I see every single signing he's made fits in that system. Okay. The problem is we end up overpaying for them. And it's not because of Ten Hag has dug his heels in. It's the same bullshit that we will fuck around until August comes in.
Find out.
And then obviously the... Yeah, find out, basically. We'll fuck around and find out. It keeps happening, man. Every season. And, okay, to United's credit, I like the fact that we got Onana in early. We got Mount in early. We got Hoyland in early. Good. That's a good sign, like, for things to come. But
this is like,
I still think
this is
that
like
there's so much better.
Fucking decoration on your project before filling it in. We needed the six. That was all that was required. You could have gone through this entire window with a forward and a six. It would have been bare bones. No, dude, it would have been bare bones.
I don't think so, bro. I think Onana was the most important signing we could have made.
Okay, yeah, away from Onana. Okay, I'll give you that. Away, other than Onana.
And I mean, another important point is that the recurring trend of these Ten Hag signings are always someone or the other who he's had a previous association with, and I think that says a lot. Yeah, I mean, that says a lot about our recruitment and our scouting team, because I genuinely don't believe that the scouts have enough data on players to try and fit the mold of what Ten Hag wants.
Even if they have, as much as Akshat will testament to, it's about what you're doing with
yeah.
it. Even if you have the best data models in the world, you need to have some expertise to figure out what on God's green earth you want from life.
I just don't think there's enough input from the scouting data, from the scouting reports that come in that help United get the players that they're looking for. And it's one of those Thanos moments, you know, where Thanos says, like, fuck it, I'll do it myself. That's exactly how Ten Hag is, that, okay, I've seen this player.
No, and honestly, Amar, to that point, okay, which is the last player United have found?
Nobody.
Honestly, just think about
Cristiano
it.
Cristiano fucking Ronaldo.
The only player coming to my mind is Martial, and he isn't even that good right now.
Cristiano, what did you find? You found your lost keys for your house that you
no,
terminated
that
lease
of 6 years
back. No,
that is the standard,
back.
Bro. I'm saying.
And you put a Ballon d'Or clause in his contract.
Because you thought you were fancy like that.
Ed Woodward, bro. Masterclass.
Ed Woodward masterclass.
But this is what they will fucking posture as good business. But good business is just efficiency and just being good at your job. That's it's.
Sir, good business is Andy Robertson for 8 million.
No, but Shaunik, that is exactly the point I'm trying to make. Which is that signing United have made in the past few years. So, it comes down to, like,
to be
so
fair,
Burhan, to kind of come back to what you were saying, that we're like, Ten Hag is very clear on who he wants to sign, we only sign them. Bro, we don't have anything else. We have nothing else to go on.
We want fucking Schneider every transfer window. Go tell our scout Schneider's been retired for a decade. They'll be like, huh? I'm sure Schneider's still on a fucking Schneider and that Benfica striker, man. Fuck. By the time you catch up with the deficiency in how you do your business, that fucking season is gone. Why? Tell me why. Because other people are, for a fucking change, good at their goddamn job, bro. They're actually doing shit. You go scattergun approach and get people in. At least get them in a structurally fucking competent way. Do it in such a way that it actually is able to get bedded into your system. Don't do it such that you have to fucking bed in Antony when you're already losing like 6 games on the bounce or some stupid shit like that. You know, like, don't put pressure into an already pressurized situation. Don't shoot yourself in the leg because there's tax for English clubs out of market shopping. You're fucking Manchester United. People are going to want more money. You come to them on the day project is due. When you tell mom to get chart paper that day in the night, you're going to get a fucking hand across your face. And that's what happens to United. And it's so bad, bro. And this is not happening once or twice. This has happened in, like, when can you guys, Amar and Akshat, remember a time when this has not happened at least once or twice in the players bought in that transfer market? Every player, even the ones you get in, are like, Sancho, like, every tell me what you brought all this to, bro. Whose Excel spreadsheet are you using, bro? Find me that intern. Somebody needs to do better fucking follow-up here. Someone's voicemail is not being heard. Like, I'm hitting my mic and all that. I can't do this. It's a Saturday.
Vaishnav wants to go and punch something, I'm sure, after the end of this episode.
Either that or he has a project due, bro.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, closing points, guys. Closing points, I think overall a very good transfer window for United, no matter how badly we've gotten the players in.
I agree with Amar, like, the players we've got in for the system,
yeah,
it's maybe, good, but
yes,
yeah, the,
overall,
the,
yeah,
you turn to page 2 of the book and you're like, oh fuck, what is this?
In terms of efficiency, yes, Vaishnav has a really good argument that we are not good at the way we do our business, but just purely in terms of players that we've got in, I think we've done a fairly decent job, and also making a reactionary last minute Sergio Reguilon loan where clearly, you know, both our left backs are injured.
That is, yeah,
that,
you can't, yeah,
you know, we
like...
needed that, and it's good that we reacted at least in this transfer window instead of like scouting players for winter and then not signing them then also. You know, we've seen this happen to United too.
Hey, no, but I'm so happy that Luke Shaw got injured last game week instead of next one, bro. We would have been fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just think about it. We would have had Dalot playing as left back for 6 months, bro.
Oh, but my favorite signing of United for this season has been Johnny Evans, dude. Johnny fucking Evans. Back at United,
bro,
as a centre back.
No shade. That guy is probably going to have as big a presence as Varane and fucking Ten Hag on that pitch and locker. Like, if he's around the first
for
team
sure.
squad, that'll be great.
If he makes it on
him,
the pitch.
Forget pitch. Even in the locker room, him, Casemiro, Varane, Ten Hag, that's a good batch of leaders to have, man. Those four players have been there, done that. Like, that's good. Or four people.
Okay. Thank you, listeners, for getting to the end of this to this podcast. Like, share, subscribe, and a very, very special thank you to our two guests, Shaunik and Burhan. It was really fun having you guys on this podcast, and we hope we can do this again. And to my fellow podcasters, Akshat, Vaishnav, and Po, we will see you again next week. Bye-bye.